This week on the show, Jared Weiss of USA Today joins us to talk about the Celtics' 8-game win streak, a Boston sports roundup, and we talk about your hot takes. All that and more coming up. Callin' It starts right now. Welcome to the show. My name is Alex Barth. My co-host, as always, Alex Lebowitz. Across the table from me, Alex, how you doing?
Doing well. Doing very well.
We want to welcome, of course, our usual viewers to the program, as well as, we believe, some new viewers this week. The big announcement, it was supposed to come last week. Just some technical things, you know how it goes. We are now powered by CLNS Media, the leading online provider of audiovisual coverage of New England sports. They have been nice enough to put our show up on their app, their Twitter, etc. We hope we can do them proud. We'll do that by just doing what we're doing, but some new listeners to the program this week. So we want to let everybody know what the show is about, what you can expect Monday afternoons from Callin' It, Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz, week in and week out. We'll touch on mostly Boston sports, all four. We haven't gotten to Bruins as much as we wanted to this year, but the Bruins haven't done as much as they've wanted to this year, so I think, you know, that's okay, and we'll get to them. But we'll touch on all four Boston sports with guests, notable Boston media personalities. We'll have people on from, of course, CLNS, 98.5, the Boston Globe, et cetera, et cetera. And all over, you know, do we take any guests if anybody's listening and they want to come on?
Yep.
We'll touch on the big national stories as well. Talk college football, college basketball, of course. We talked the World Series last week. We're not going to miss any big national headline.
No, we cover it all. Mainly New England stuff, but there's something in the news that needs to be talked about. We're going to be talking about it.
A little bit of entertainment stuff as well. We'll touch on it here and there. The important thing to remember about the show, and I started the show back in January of 2017, so relatively new. Lebo joined. You joined what, in June, right?
I believe May or June. Late May or early June, one of the two.
Shows how great our memory is. But the point of this show is, look, there's a lot going on, especially in today's society, the cultural, the societal intersection of sports, politics, et cetera. And while that stuff is important and it does deserve to be talked about, I created the show with the idea that, well, that does need to be talked about. There still should be a home for classic X's and O's, in-between-the-line sports talk, and that's what you're going to get on this show from us. So we like talking depth charts, off-season, you know, contract, getting into the nitty-gritty with that. If you listen to 98.5, anything Felger says he doesn't have time for, a lot of that is what we're talking about.
Yes, we not to say we overanalyze, but we're sports nuts, and we try to be apolitical. I think that's a good point. There's not many places that, you know, don't touch politics. Not to say that we haven't gone there a little bit, but we refrain for the most
part. I think
we're
two wannabe coaches, wannabe GMs, just kind of getting all of that out once a week on Monday afternoons.
Yeah. Wannabe pitcher. I want to be a player, but that dream ended.
I think even the wannabe athlete stuff is beyond us. But,
way beyond.
So a couple of armchair GMs, armchair coaches here. Broadcasting weekly from Wellesley, Massachusetts, the Little Park Media Studio, and now powered by CLNS. So just to catch everybody up, we'll say this is a, you know, if you missed the last season, last time on Callin' It, where we're at, we've been mostly Patriots the last couple of weeks, of course. This being the bye week, the perfect chance for us to jump in here, a nice resetting point halfway through. Mm-hmm. And we're both, I don't want to speak for you, but I think we're kind of on the same page, at least where I come from. I'm more hesitant with this Patriots team than I have been in the past, but as crazy as this season has been, here we are halfway through. And the top two teams in the AFC are the Patriots and the Steelers. And as bad as it's looked at times, and as surprisingly good as some other teams have looked, we're right where we thought we'd be 8 weeks in.
I think so. I mean, they're a little bit more disappointing than I anticipated them being. I look at this team, there's still holes. There's still concerns. It's not going to be a cakewalk to the Super Bowl like it has been in years past. So I'm not really optimistic. The only benefit they have is they're playing in they're in a conference that's been extremely underwhelming.
I still think I have faith in them to be able to fix the holes. And I saw them the opposite of you. I have faith in them to be able to fix the holes. But
yeah,
as bad as their conference has been, of their next, what do they have left, eight games?
Mm-hmm.
Five of those are divisional games, and their division's proving to be pretty tough. The Bills have looked good outside of a bad Thursday night loss to the Jets. The Jets are at 500, which nobody saw coming. And the Dolphins can sneak up on you here and there. They can. We'll see what's going on with their quarterback situation, but trading Jay Ajayi, they may have lost their biggest piece, but they still have guys that tend to kill the Patriots. Jarvis Landry, Kenny Stills, Ndamukong Suh, Cameron Wake. Those guys have just figured the Patriots out in five divisional games in the last 6 weeks. Those are going to be some battles. We saw it yesterday on Sunday. The Texans and the Colts, even though both those teams are bad, they're on second-string quarterbacks. Divisional football is always close football.
Yeah, and I think this is another place we differ. I don't think they're going to have any problem for the remainder of the season. I think they're losing one game tops, maybe two. I don't see that happening. I'm worried about the AFC Championship game. I'm worried about the AFC Divisional Round playing a team like the Steelers that has a defense that's been decent this year. That's my concern with this team, getting into the playoffs and just having a game where their offensive line isn't playing as well as they should be, where their defense isn't stopping the run. So that's my take.
Look, I said I'm worried. I don't think I'm necessarily going to lose that many of those games.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the divisional games, but you're right. What does that do for them for the playoffs? Celtics, and we'll talk to Jared Weiss a little later in the show of USA Today. So we'll kind of curb our Celtics takes right now, but I think we're both pretty high on the Celtics. It's hard not to be.
Absolutely. It feels like when this Patriots dynasty runs down, the Celtics one will start right up. So the streak in Boston seems like it might continue with this core.
And we'll talk more about that in the next segment. Jared Weiss will join us on the phone from USA Today. The Bruins, as up as I am on the Celtics, I am down on the Bruins. They are a very young team and a very old team at the same time. They have maybe one established veteran, not aging veteran, but veteran player, and that's Brad Marchand. Even Bergeron's starting to look old. I don't know what to make of this team. They're paying Tuukka Rask $7 million a year. That's ultimately what it always comes back to for me. If you want happy-go-lucky Bruins talk, you're not going to like me.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a young team with a veteran presence or an old team with a few young guys that are pretty good. They're like at the in-between stage. So I don't know what to think about the Bruins. They're such a mediocre franchise, mediocre team. But we'll see. Yeah, and Tuukka, $7 million a year. He's going to be out soon, though.
I got to talk to Jimmy Murray, who's on CLNS. You can listen to Murphy's Hockey Law, also on the app. Download iPhone and Android. He's very high on Tuukka. And we're going to have him on the show at some point. The schedules haven't synced up yet, but I'm very excited for that conversation in the coming weeks. Hot take for me is that the Patriots will win 10 games before the Bruins do. And that would mean the Bruins win four games in the next 4 weeks and the Patriots go undefeated.
Yeah.
So, you know. And then finally, the Red Sox. Obviously, you won't hear a lot of Red Sox talk from us initially, just given the time. When the winter meetings come, I'm sure there'll be some discussions. We've talked. If you want to, you can go back on the app and hear some of our previous episodes. We encourage you to do that. What was it, 2 weeks ago? We talked Giancarlo Stanton and J.D. Martinez and that kind of thing. I'm all right with Alex Cora. You know, that's kind of the big headline right now. He's being introduced Monday. Today we're recording this. I've never really heard of anybody on his staff, and I see that as a good thing. They didn't go glitz and glam for any names, you know, like Ruben Amaro at first base, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the Tony La Russa signing, though. I think it puts some pressure on both Cora and Dombrowski, some needed pressure.
Yeah, I just think Cora is more likable than Farrell was. I think he's
100%.
Someone who's going to be way more respected, and he'll be able to control that clubhouse. I think that's a priority for a Red Sox manager at this point. Will he be great in game? That's yet to be seen. I'm optimistic for Cora's future in Boston, though.
All right, so that's us.
Yeah.
Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz, we'll be bringing you the Call in the Podcast every Monday. We're glad we finally get to talk to you there, CLNS Nation. Of course, we thank our loyal viewers for coming back week after week. Not much on the show will change for you guys who have been with me and Lebowitz since May. I don't even know if there's anybody who's been with me since January. Props to you if you stuck that. I think there's maybe two people and they're my parents. And I don't even know how much my parents listen, to be honest. So, but we're looking forward to some new listeners engaging. You follow us on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast. We'd love to engage with listeners on Twitter. We're on iTunes. You can subscribe there. And of course, the CLNS Media app and CLNSmedia.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us there as well. So that's our little get to know you, a little icebreaker. We'll be back on the other side. We're talking the hottest team in Boston sports, the Celtics. Jared Weiss of USA Today joins us 30 seconds, and then we're back. You're listening to Callin' It.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Calling It, powered by CLNS. Joining us on the phone, he's the editor of the Celtics Wire at USA Today, and you can catch him on the Garden Report for CLNS as well. Jared Weiss. Jared, how are you doing today?
I am doing fine. Monday on a back-to-back. It's the best time of the year.
And you mentioned you just got the new iPhone. I wonder, because it's so new, if this is the first radio interview done with the new iPhone. It's the first for our show, so a little product placement right there. All right.
Yeah, it actually is, yeah.
So let's get right into it. The Celtics are on an 8-game win streak, longest in the league, one of the best records in the league. They've been cruising since losing 2 to start this season. But now they have 2 wins over quality opponents over the weekend, Oklahoma City and then the Orlando Magic the other night. How have these 2 games specifically framed the outlook on this team after they were rolling over some weaker opponents at the beginning?
Yeah, it changes the narrative from they were cruising on an easy schedule to now they're beating good teams. I mean, Orlando is down point guards multiple. So, I mean, you know, they're still hitting them while they're a little bit wounded. Same thing with San Antonio, where San Antonio was without Manu, who, as we can see, is still throwing down dunks at age 40, and obviously no Kawhi. So, I mean, they had a few good opponents that they were able to get them at the right time. But that OKC win, I think, is that defining win that shows that they are – legitimately, this is not like some sort of, draw of luck. This is Boston has a good system. They have a great coach, obviously. They have guys that are playing connected, and they have a way to mishmash their lineups that they don't really have any weak lineups on the floor very often. They don't really have any lulls like they have in years past. So that's one of the big things that they fixed. And now they're winning a lot of games in the late third quarter, early fourth quarter with their second unit. That happened with Oklahoma, happened on Sunday against Orlando. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that they weren't really doing that much before. They don't really have any weaknesses at this point except for just they don't have that level of potency that they would have had if Gordon Hayward was still around.
So obviously Kyrie Irving, and Al Horford has been a rock defensively for this team. Outside of those two guys, who's impressed you the most on the Celtics roster?
It's hard to pick who's impressed the most. I mean, everyone else has been very good, but not overall exceptional in the way that those guys have, which is not surprising. Those guys are the two all-stars on the team. But I guess Terry Rozier is one that I think sticks out above the rest in that, like, I guess, relative to what you expected from him, in that he has – I just had a story up on Celtics Wire about how Stevens is going with these 3-guard lineups that are centered around Smart and Rozier, that they're having a lot of success in, like, the early fourth quarter. It was really successful against OKC when they had Smart and Rozier together. Sunday against Orlando, they did those two with Larkin, and that was a huge part of the run in the early fourth where they just got a ton of defensive stops. And so even though the offense isn't working that great with those units, they play at the highest pace of any unit that the Celtics play with pretty much. And they force turnovers, they get defensive rebounds, which is a big part. Smart and Rozier have been rebounding really well. And Boston is a top 10 defensive rebounding team this year, which is something that's really new for them. And they're just executing well, especially on defense. They're playing really good defense with those lineups. So I think Rozier gets a lot of credit for, like, I was just looking at, I think it was 3-man groupings, which is in the story. The top 6 3-man groupings on the team for pace, Rozier is in 5 of those 6, and Smart is in the other one. So those guys are really pushing the tempo. I think a big part of it is that they're converting defensive rebounds. They're forcing a lot of turnovers, where Rozier, Smart, and Kyrie are competing for who's going to lead the league in steals right now, which is kind of crazy. And that's been huge to them not having that drop-off when Kyrie comes off the floor, Horford comes off the floor. So Rozier's been huge. And then obviously Jason Tatum, I think everybody's pretty hot up on this by now. He is just way ahead of where anyone expected him to be at this point. Stevens, you know, he gets a lot of praise for his intellectual capacity, his ability to learn things once and be able to implement them, which is something a lot of guys have trouble with. He is shooting, I think, over 50% from 3 still on over 3 attempts per game, which is pretty remarkable for a rookie, especially someone who I didn't think would be that good of a spot-up deep shooter early in his career, and that's already something he has in the bag at this point. So Tatum's been great on both ends. Jaylen Brown has been like a high usage guy that they've really had to put a lot. They've really relied on him, and he has come through for them really well. He's been really good on both ends, even though he has a lot of things he needs to figure out in his offensive game. But he's been a potent scorer, and he's been a really versatile, dominant defender. So I would point to those three guys as like the huge surprises for them.
You mentioned the rebounding, which to me seems like the biggest overall surprise. And now that they have more, first of all, the first part of the question, why has the rebounding gotten so much better? And now that Morris is starting to get some floor time, he's coming back for the injury, can their rebounding get even better?
Well, I mean, ironically, Morris hasn't traditionally been a good rebounder. His rebounding numbers haven't been that great over his career, although he's played next to some really good rebounders, Andre Drummond most recently, you know, guys that take up most of the defensive rebound, even offensive rebound opportunities. So maybe there's some noise in his numbers from that regard. But I mean, I think the big thing is that they've always had their rebounding scheme as bigs box out so that guards and wings can fly in and grab the rebounds. And it's starting to actually work in their overall numbers now. So Rozier and Smart have been a big part of that. Jaylen and Tatum are both pretty good rebounders for their position as well. So they're one of the few teams in the league that every single player, and Tyree's also been trying to really make it a point of emphasis to go for these rebounds. So all their lineups are filled with guys that are able to crash the glass. So I think that's one of the big things for them and why it should be able to be sustainable. And Aaron Baines, you know, Amir Johnson was good last year, and I like Amir's game, and he fits something that they need. But Baines, while he may not do all the things that Amir does, he does a few things very well. His verticality defense under the rim has been incredible so far. And he is an absolute bulldog battling on the glass. And so he gets beaten sometimes. You know, last night there was a play where he boxed out Bismack Biyombo, but Biyombo's so big and long that he was able to reach over him and tip the ball out for an offensive rebound. That stuff kind of happens, but he's winning a lot of wars on the glass. And I think that's been a big part for the team.
We're talking to Jared Weiss of USA Today. Jared, who deserves more credit for what we've seen so far this year, Brad Stevens or Danny Ainge?
I would say, I mean, I think that's a trick question because those two work in harmony. I appreciate you trying to screw me up on a Monday afternoon at this point. But I would say Stevens deserves I think you have to give the round of applause to Stevens for the fact that, I mean, Ainge obviously put them in position for them to be good. But frankly, Ainge made this really hard on Brad, where he's like, hey, Brad, I knew you established a really good core locker room continuity last year, so I'm going to break it all over for you, and you have to build back up. And Brad did it overnight, and the fact that they lost Gordon and have somehow gotten better since they lost, well, I wouldn't say better, but they're performing as well as human, literally as well as possible since they lost them. They keep winning after that back-to-back to start the night, start the season where they lost them. So, I mean, what Brad's doing right now is phenomenal. They're implementing their system even without Gordon. They move Smart back to the bench, and Smart is kind of going back to the role he was in last year, even though I thought it was going to evolve a little bit since Gordon was there. And Smart is, you know, I mean, Smart has a lot of issues with shot selection, but I think overall he's been really effective as a point, as like a distributing point guard, and he's been incredible on defense so far. So everybody's buying into their roles. They've got Kyrie for all the BS that he puts out there and all the ridiculous stuff he puts out there. He's been really focused on preaching kind of group collective responsibility and how I may be the leader of this team, but my leadership goals is that everybody respects themselves and respects each other and that everybody thrives off of each other. So, I mean, they're establishing the type of of locker room ethos that they need to have success in a situation where they lose one of their best players. So I think you just got to give Brad a lot of credit for, you know, I mean, you give Kyrie credit for this obviously as well, but give them credit for everyone. He's pretty much bringing the best out of everyone, and everyone's stepping up to the challenge. And Horford has been super aggressive this year, and he has been, you know, a borderline MVP candidate so far this year. It's been pretty much an optimal situation, considering it's a terrible situation.
So looking down the road now for the Celtics, they have 5 games in the next 10 days, just one of those against a team that is currently over 500 in the Raptors. And then November 16th, the Golden State Warriors come to the Garden. What are the chances that the Celtics are still riding this win streak when Golden State comes to town in a week and a half?
I doubt it. I can't imagine them winning that many games in a row. I mean, honestly, this Monday game against Atlanta could be a trap game because it's a second night of a back-to-back while they're on the road. However, Atlanta's also in a back-to-back, just had a battle with Cleveland. Boston only has to travel. Like, you can walk from Orlando to Atlanta. They're pretty close. So the travel, and it was an earlier game on Sunday, too, so it wasn't like they were flying out at 3 in the morning. So, you know, this might not be that difficult of a back-to-back for Boston. We'll see if somebody sets off the fire alarm in their hotel in Atlanta. But I'm not encouraging anyone to do that. But so, you know, Boston could take this one. This was the one that I assumed would be a potential schedule loss, but they have a good chance to take it. And I know that they're facing relatively easy opponents up until that Golden State game, but it's pulling off what would be, a 13-game winning streak?
I think so, yeah.
This type of season. It's obviously possible, but it's very unlikely. I wouldn't be surprised if they lost that Toronto game, and they've always struggled with Toronto, so we'll see what happens. But I would put my money on no, they don't have a 13-game winning streak, which would be one of the longest winning streaks in the NBA over the last, decade or so.
I mean, if they do, and then they're going up against Golden State, that would be one of the most hyped regular season NBA games that I can remember, recent memory.
It would be insane. There's no question about it.
All right, one more question for you, Jared, here before we let you go. As much as the Celtics are surging, last year's Eastern Conference champion, Cleveland, they're under 500. They lost again over the weekend. Whose start is more indicative of what the team actually is, the Celtics or the Cavs?
Oh, that's a great question. Wow. I would say Cleveland, honestly, because I think Boston is overachieving, but they're generally doing, they're running their system as it should be ran, and like a lot of the things that they're doing are sustainable, while Cleveland is basically showing all the flaws in both the roster composition, where they decided to get just like a ton of veterans that are way past their prime and didn't really invest in youth building besides Chetty Osman, this is what happens when your team is set up for you to count on LeBron to elevate his game on a nightly basis to an unsustainable point. You know, LeBron coasts through the regular season. That's how he runs it because he's smart and he knows he wants to win the title, and it's proven to work. But, you know, they have to have the rest of the team hold up to a certain degree with double T down for the next month or so with this calf strain. I mean, they don't have anyone that they can, rely on to definitely do his job on a nightly basis. And there's a lot of pressure on Kevin Love to really dominate, and it's not quite happening. And then, everyone else on their team that's active right now, these are all flawed veteran players who know who they are. They're on the downswing of their career. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, I'm struggling right now, of anyone else on Cleveland that you think has the potential to really elevate their game.
I mean, you can maybe J.R. Smith gets hot one night. That, to me, right now is their second scoring option, him or Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, and both, and those are both horrible options.
Right.
Those are both guys that should be the seventh best player on your team. Dwayne Wade is one of my favorite players of all time. At this point of his career, Dwayne is a, give you five really good minutes a night and then 15 mediocre minutes a night and really dominate once every few games. But Wade was put in this position where he was like the secondary creator, and Wade can't be a creator anymore. He can be a guy that is on the weak side elbow and the ball gets swung to him and he attacks the closeout and makes some magic happen, sure. But you're not running pick and roll with Dwayne anymore. You're not putting him in ISO situations anymore. He's past that point. And I like that they brought in Wade, and I would rather have Wade than Richard Jefferson, even though Richard Jefferson is my favorite interview in the NBA, or one of them at least. But Dwayne, at least they moved him to the bench. And you know what? I forgot Jay Crowder. Obviously, Jay is someone who
right.
could get better. And we know that I know Brian Windhorst confirmed this. It's something that I heard as well, is that Jay wasn't quite ready for the season, unsurprisingly, because his mother passed away during the offseason, or actually the night that he got traded, right when he got traded, literally. So, you know, Jay hopefully will get it together and will start to play at the level that he played at in the first half of the season last year. And then hopefully Cleveland will be more competitive. And obviously that's something you want as a basketball fan. You want to see Cleveland performing at a competitive level so that they're exciting and there's competition. But they have so many issues that I don't think can be fixed, especially defensively. And Isaiah Thomas coming back is not going to fix their defensive issues. It's going to I don't know if it exacerbate them, so I'm not sure how much worse he is than Derrick Rose defensively. But at least their offense being great should take a lot of strain off of their defense, and hopefully Isaiah can come back. It sounds like he might be back even before New Year's. Hopefully he can come back, start to really get in a rhythm with LeBron, and they can actually have a dominant offense again and coast off of that.
For all things Celtics, you can follow him on Twitter at JaredWeissNBA, the Celtics Wire, USA Today, and CLNS Media. Jared, thanks for calling in and breaking it down for us.
That was fun.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Calling It. Good stuff there from Jared, as always.
Yeah, he's an awesome interview.
Okay, so we tweeted out this morning. This is a segment we want to start doing. We're going to try it out. You know, it's Monday. Everybody's been watching sports all week, and they've been busy with it. And we've all formulated our takes from the weekend. Mm-hmm. So we are going to have a Hot Take Monday. We had people tweet us in their hot takes, and we're going to rank them based on how hot the take is, zero being the Boston Bruins, 10 being the Boston Celtics.
Of course.
And then, of course, discuss the validity of the take. There will be some sound effects as well, so a little fun for everybody. And we got 1 minute on the clock per take, right?
Yes, sir.
1 minute on the clock per take. We'll start with one of ours each way. I have this, since we didn't get to talk about college basketball much today, and the season opens Friday. Brian Bowen, if that name sounds familiar, he was the player at the center of the scandal with Louisville. He has been suspended indefinitely. My hot take, he will bolt for Europe and then go to the draft. We won't see him in college basketball.
Yeah. I think we could see that. I think that's a trend that should happen in NCAA more than it has. And hopefully, because I hate the NCAA, it becomes more of a regular thing. But when you're at the center of these controversies, is it really the player's fault for capitalizing on their abilities? I mean, that's just the original argument. There's nothing new there. But I don't know. I would bolt if I were him. I'd be out.
It's probably like a 2 out of 10, but I figured it was worth talking about. Okay, your hot take.
My hot take was Bill Belichick is currently declining in his coaching ability faster than Tom Brady is declining with his playing ability.
That's like an 8. Because you're talking about a guy declining mentally faster than a 40-year-old is declining physically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big one. And that's, you know, there is some discussion to be had. And I'm guessing that that's in the wake of the Jimmy Garoppolo trade is kind of what brought that to light for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if it's the Garoppolo trade, but I think it's I don't know. It's just personnel decisions.
He doesn't seem to have that spark this year.
He wants to win the Super Bowl with, like, the least amount of talent possible, and he doesn't. So it works. I don't know.
All right, we'll start off with a take from Sam. This is also football related. The Jaguars are the biggest threat to the Patriots in the AFC. Blaine Gabbert and the Jaguars. Hot take, police, on that one. That's up there.
That's I'd say that's an 8.2 on the hot takes.
8.2. Look, the Jaguars have a good pass rush. It gives the Patriots trouble, but could they even get to a point where they'd be playing the Patriots in the playoffs?
I don't think so.
Yeah, me neither. Here's another Tom Brady one. This is from Christian. Tom Brady will play long enough to pass George Blanda as the oldest player to take a snap in the NFL. George Blanda played till he was 48, so Brady would have to play 49 years. Brady said 45.
Till he was 49 years old, not 49 more years.
That's a hot take. I don't think it happens. Also, that was a reply when we said quote tweet. So
a lot of people don't know what quote tweets are.
A lot of people don't know what quote tweets are. They want to reply. We got a basketball one from Steve. We just talked about this with Jared. This is adding on a bit. Neither the Cavaliers nor the Warriors will play in the NBA Finals.
That's a 9.5. Both of those teams, I think.
I'm going to go with like a 7.
Neither of those teams?
The Cavs clearly have their issues. And not the Warriors don't have issues, but the West is really good. Somebody could catch them, maybe.
The Golden State Warriors are a year older. They're a year better. No one's out of their prime, and they're a super team. Doesn't matter what other teams there are in that conference. They're coming out of that out of the Western Conference.
All right, this one's from Jimmy. After this year is over, the NBA should name the Executive of the Year Award after Danny Ainge.
Oh, snap.
After Danny Ainge. Or, oh, wow.
Name the Executive of the Year Award after Danny Ainge.
I feel
Ainge.
Like you got to win it a couple times to have that That's happen.
He should. He is on pace to win it this year, though. We got a couple more football ones. This one's from John. Patriots won't make it to the AFC Championship game.
Whatever.
Yeah, they're making it. They're making it. That's a 9.52. I'm going back to 9.5.
Patriots Steelers book it. That's a 10 for stupidity. Yeah. On the other end of the spectrum, this is from Dan on Twitter. Ben McAdoo won't make it to week 17. The team has quit, and his hairstyle is deplorable. That's like a 0 hot take, but
it's like I'll give it a 5. I mean, his haircut being deplorable is no hot take. It's disgusting.
And I don't even know if when Dan says haircut, he includes the facial hair, because that's the worst part.
You got to include it. It's the whole picture. The jogging pants, the sweatshirt, sneakers, the whole combo. It's awful.
I'll one up Dan here with the hot take. I think McAdoo is going to be the first coach fired this year, for whatever that is.
Yeah, probably.
All right, well, we move on. This comes from Seth. We got another football one here. Kirk Cousins will be a Steeler next season.
Oh, baby.
That's a good one. I like that one.
That's one of my favorite ones.
That's an 8.7. There's a lot of teams that are going to go out.
Oh, wait,
there.
We're throwing decimals on these now?
Oh, I mean, rookie scores if you go whole
one
numbers.
Take, everybody knows the rule.
Exactly. Yeah, he could end up anywhere. I mean, the thing with that is you're saying it's Roethlisberger's last season. Probably. I don't think they're going to end up with Cousins, though. I just don't.
So I said a couple weeks ago on the show that I think that 04 draft class of Manning, Rivers, and Roethlisberger will all be removed from starting jobs on their current teams next year. They'll either be starting elsewhere, retired, or backing up. But it plays into that. Kirk Cousins, interesting name. We got a basketball take here. This comes from Eric Porzingis. Kristaps Porzingis. NBA MVP.
Fail!
No, you got to win. They're brutal. I think Antetokounmpo has a better shot than Porzingis. I think there's probably seven guys who have a better shot than Porzingis.
That's a 10 as a hot take. I was supposed to be snoring. I don't know what that was. Taking a guy on a bad team who's not even a top three player in his conference. If it happens, that's a great prediction there from Eric, but I think we're a ways off. And this one coming from Jesse. We've got a hockey take here. The Golden Knights, the expansion Vegas Golden Knights, will represent the Western Conference in the 2018 Stanley Cup Finals.
Freeze!
Yeah, I don't know. Because what they're doing right now, they've kind of cooled off a little bit. Started, what, 8-1?
Yeah,
it's a good. I like it because I think he's doing it for the sake of the discussion. That is a hot take. No chance the Vegas Golden Knights are representing the Western Conference.
Well, look, they've been off to one of the best starts, not just as an expansion team. They're one of the better teams in the NHL thus far. They do have goaltending issues.
Yeah,
but if they can get that figured out, this is a team that probably will make the playoffs. And we know how it works. If somebody gets hot in the playoffs, you get hot. And the question is, what does that mean for them long-term, not having early draft picks earlier in their existence, making the playoffs this year, maybe not in their best overall interest? And one final take, this is from Jake on Twitter. Rose is a murderer. There was room for Jack on the raft. Of course, referring to the
Titanic.
To the famous Titanic movie.
That's not a hot take because so many people say it. I'd say that's a two on the hot take scale. It's wrong. I mean, it's wrong.
It's wrong. No, it's called buoyancy. Just because there's room doesn't mean that it would float with both their weight on
it. This is my problem because I think that's irrelevant. It's we both die or we both live. You got to at least make room because she's not like it's 1912. She's not like I got to take into account buoyancy. Like that wasn't a thought back then. You know, it's we both got to live. Get on here. If we both die, we die. That's my whole thing. It was selfish. She's like, I'm putting me above you,
I've never seen the movie. Didn't he tell her, go on without me?
Wow.
Yeah, that's probably the hottest take on this segment. I have no interest in seeing it either.
It's a long movie.
Isn't there like a go on without me kind of thing? Or
maybe. And she, you know what? She's a rich girl. She grew up very spoiled. Maybe she felt entitled to live over him.
Oh, of course.
So it was elitism. That's what Sam replied to that tweet. He's like, typical elitist Rose.
I'm not saying that she was right, but the thing would have sank and they both would have died.
She doesn't know that, though. You at least try.
Well, if he climbs on and then the thing sinks, then you know. And then, okay, well, get off. I want to live. I want to float back to shore.
Then it's a murder-suicide. It's horrible. Yeah.
Really not the great, loving movie everybody thinks it is when you really break it down.
It's not. Rose is a horrible person, I guess.
All right. Well, on that note, that will do it for us this week. I'd like to thank Jared for coming on earlier in the show. We'll be back next week. The Patriots have a couple of big games. They go out west. They got the Broncos in Denver and then the Raiders in Mexico City. So two season-defining games.
Sergio Dipp, I think, is going to be on the sidelines for Mexico
enough
City.
I'm so done with that guy.
Hey, Bill Belichick will be having the time of his life.
Hopefully the Patriots are having the time of their lives out there. Obviously, Celtics, as that keeps going, we'll keep talking about them as long as they play well. The Golden State game coming up. And the Bruins. We will eventually touch on the Bruins when they win some games.
Absolutely.
All right, so all that coming up next week. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter, at Callnet Podcast. And now you can hear us on the CLNS Media app as well. So download the CLNS Media app on the App Store for iPhone. We'll be back next week. If it was your first show, thank you for joining us. We hope to talk to you again same time, same place next Monday. For Alex Leibowitz, I'm Alex Barth. This has been Callnet, powered by CLNS.